Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm doing well. We do have a fan on.
I'm gonna go take care of that.
I like that idea. No, I'm doing really well. It's been an interesting week. I had a number of cases that were getting ready to go to trial. So I had a trial at the end of this month. And then I had another trial set for about 2 weeks into next month. One of them was going to be pretty extensive, and the other one was more straightforward. But they both settled, like, in the last 2 days.
Because they knew the big dog was coming.
Yeah, no, I don't think that had any part of the settlement. But they did both settle, and they both of them kind of felt like these probably aren't going to settle. So that was big. And then I spent all day working on sort of putting together settlement agreements until like 2 minutes before.
I mean, you had sufficient time to ignore my call.
Yeah. Well, I was, when you're working and you kind of like
see my name pop up and
put your phone to the side and you're just like I was really into it. So yeah, I did miss your call. I'm sorry.
You ignored it. It only rang twice.
No, I didn't. I mean, I wasn't touching my phone. I was not even all that close to my phone.
Yeah. Maybe somebody ignored it.
Nope. It was sitting on the table. I just didn't get it. So sorry, buddy. I mean, if I'd seen it, I probably would have ignored it, but.
okay, that makes sense.
What the shit was that?
That's always, I don't know, it's like partially deflating and partially like kind of relieving, I don't know. But I'm good. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good, just chugging along. I'm, you know, made some pasta today. I got a Lodge enamel cast iron because I saw it at the store and I was like, you know, I want an enamel
$45 or whatever.
I want an enamel cast iron Dutch oven because I want to try it. Like, I want to see if I'm actually going to use it before I drop the $500 on a Le Creuset, you know?
Sure.
And that's like, I feel like a reasonable entry into it because I don't know if I'm going to use it. So I made some braised beef ragu today. And some fresh pasta.
Nice.
It was delightful. Problem is, it makes it hard for the air conditioning to keep up when you're running your oven, even at just 250 all day. That the air conditioning definitely struggles to.
What kind of beef did you do? Did you do
just a chuck?
A little roast?
Yeah, I just did a chuck roast, seared it, and threw it in there with all the mirepoix plus shallots and
the fixins.
Garlic, and what else did I put in there? I think that was it. Bunch of fresh herbs because I had those in the fridge. It was good. It was delightful, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. Just simmered for, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours. And some pappardelle pasta. Fuck. It was good. I went down a deep rabbit hole of pasta shapes and making them today. I probably watched 2.5 hours of YouTube of of pasta shape making. Because I was thinking I was going to make tortellini and brodo for
dinner. Did you make the pasta?
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
It's super easy.
No, it's easy to make pasta, but
it requires some equipment.
It's an extra step for sure.
It's an extra step, but I liken it to like Totino's is good in the oven, but it's great deep fried.
Andrew, do you use like an Atlas press or do you use like a KitchenAid attachment?
I use the KitchenAid shooter.
Yeah.
I was going to make tortellini, and then I was like, I don't feel like doing that today.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. It's just a lot of work. It's just like to make 10 tortellini is 10 tortellini. It's not just cutting cutting out a sheet of pasta. But yeah, making fresh pasta is the way. It honestly does not take that much longer than dried pasta.
Yeah.
It objectively does in that it needs to rest for like a half an hour in the fridge. But outside of that, like the timing on it,
depending on what kind of pasta you're making, for sure.
But just hand cut pasta, like just pappardelle or tagliatelle, or you know, take your pick of flat noodles.
Yeah.
the actual working period is pretty short. It's probably like 12 minutes, yeah. maybe 15.
Depending on the pasta, you know, spaghetti.
It needs an extruder, but like, well, you can do it not extruded, but.
And I was going to say too, I mean, some pasta you really, you want some bite that you can't get with a fresh pasta. It's got to be dried before you can get that al dente, you know. Fresh pasta, it's always going to be pretty soft, which sometimes that's good, especially with a thicker pasta.
But. A little thicker, though. You get that good chew bite, yeah. like some bounce to it.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in the YouTube rabbit hole. and I'm not, I'm better off for it, I think. I learned a lot today.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a guy who has spent some time down rabbit holes. So
I also went to St. Vinny's, which is our local, like one of our local donation sale places.
Yeah, St. Vincent de Paul.
And I left with like 10 new cookbooks.
Oh, wow.
It's not why I went, but I walked through their cookbook aisle and I was like, oh, you're coming home with me and you're coming home with me. Like some interesting, like old cookbooks.
And you probably spent all of about $30.
$30 on 10 cookbooks, yeah. I bought I also bought the Fodor's travel guide for London from 2025. That was... I think when you buy them new, they're like $30.
Nice.
I got it for $2.99.
Sick.
Yeah. So I made out like a bandit at St. Vincent de Paul. And now I sort of understand people's thrifting obsession.
Oh, yeah. No, it can be catching for sure.
As I was walking in, there was a guy leaving with like an armload of VHS tapes. I didn't see what the titles were, but he was carrying a beach ball of VHS tapes.
Interesting. You know, I think thrifting, like so many things, it used to be different than it is now, but it's still fun. It still can be fun.
Yeah, I mean, more cookbooks is more better.
The last thing I thrifted, Andrew, was a...
motorcycle.
Yes, technically, I guess that wasn't thrifted, but the last thing I got at a thrift store was... it's a John W. Nordstrom cashmere... like camel hair colored cashmere blazer that just fits me like a glove. And actually I've lost a little weight, so it might not fit as well right now, but I like was walking through and I saw it on the rack. You know how you just, you know, you can see a good fabric as you're on the rack.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that looks like a nice fabric. And then I, you know, kind of grab it and I pull it open and I'm like, oh, this is a really nice jacket. It was probably, you know, 10, 15 years old. But it was in fantastic shape, and then I put it on, and it was just like, whoa! And I paid $7 for that jacket. And then the first time I wore it, someone was like, one of my coworkers was like, "That is a really nice jacket." And I was like, and it was a guy who knows jackets too.
Ooh, nailed it!
Yeah.
What made me think to go to St. Vinny's was I was just scrolling Reddit and saw like a sports memorabilia post that showed a dude who had gotten a Dakota Prukop, who was a backup quarterback at U of O 7 years ago, 8 years ago, but a red hat with the duck logo on
it. Yeah, the quarterback hat.
He found one of those.
I saw that post on Reddit.
Yeah, he found one of those at a thrift shop. And I was like, oh, that wouldn't be a terrible place to go look. And then some kid in Portland just got a Wilt Chamberlain warm-up jacket out of a Goodwill.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's cool.
He was like, I was looking at the dimensions of it, and I realized, like, this is
Wilt.
This is the biggest guy on the team. And then he got it verified, and he's going to make some money off of a Wilt Chamberlain warm-up jacket from whenever Wilt played, but he found it at a Goodwill.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew, do you want to get started talking about watches tonight?
Since we're talking about secondhand shit, I want to bring to everyone's attention the fact that a significant amount of Buzz Aldrin's watches are going to come up for auction at Sotheby's.
In case you want to get in on the bidding.
Well, you know what, though? Some of them are, and obviously his famous Apollo watch is in probably an arms dealer's personal collection because it was lost. In transit to the Smithsonian. It was stolen by the mafia and is certainly in a bad guy's Breitling collection. But among those watches is the Speedmaster replacement that he got from the 90s that he wore a bunch. The one that actually interested me the most is his X-33, which is either government or NASA issued. And you can know that because the case back is blank, which is something that Omega does for NASA and military contracts. So the case back can be custom engraved. And the anticipated sale price on this is only $4,000 to $6,000.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's because it's not currently in working condition. So it could be as easy as a battery swap, or it could be you're spending $6,000 just to have Buzz Aldrin's watch. Some other really cool stuff. I really like these when these auction lots come up from people like Buzz Aldrin, who aren't exactly watch people. They're just really famous and get like all kinds of free shit. There's like a Toy Story watch involved in this, like a commemorative watch from Aldrin Elementary. Just weird stuff. But also like some really historically important stuff that aren't his moon watch. So there's a handful of Buzz Aldrin's watches coming up for sale. And if you want to get in on it, you know, you could get a broken X-33 or you could get a fully functional X-33 that just needs a new battery.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. There is. Yeah. There's a 1990s Speedy Professional with an 861 in it that they say is going to go for $8,000 to $12,000, but I bet it
goes for 20 easy. Cause that's the Speedmaster he got in the '90s when his watch, you know, went missing.
Yeah. For all of these, there's someone with more money than you that's going to be willing to pay more money than you. So
I wonder if Buzz is going to buy any of his own watches.
This JLC, Shark Deep Sea chronograph is pretty dope too.
It is. Yeah. Oh, dang it.
What's that?
I accidentally grouped.
The estimate on the JLC is $10,000 to $20,000. I bet it goes for $50,000. But all of these will go for a lot of money.
They all will, because he's a historic figure, right? He's the second human to set his feet on the moon.
His little footsies.
Yeah, his little tootsies have left its footprints on the moon. And he was immediately immortalized. Like anything that guy has touched for the last 50 years is just gold, right? He's got the Midas touch.
Yeah. Do we know when what watch he was wearing when he punched that flat earther?
Oh, gosh. I would get irresponsible for that watch.
Speaking of moon watches, there was a new moon swatch that was released this week. This is
the first one I've liked in a long time, and I really do like this one.
This is pretty cool. So this is actually a collaboration between Omega and Swatch.
What?
And what they're calling this is the Mission to the Moon 1969 moon swatch, which is a limited edition to 1,969 pieces.
You know, it's the same forward and backward.
You have to like rotate it though, right?
Yeah, like the Illuminati symbol.
So this one's pretty cool. So first, it is black and gold, which are fantastic color combinations. It's the most limited moon swatch yet.
Yes.
With just a, you know,
just a hair under 2,000. Which for a moon swatch is actually a pretty limited amount.
And it's a pretty interesting execution of the deal. So obviously to celebrate the Apollo 11's moon landing, which was in 1969. And it comes with quite a bit of 18 karat moonshine gold. So now we're
putting some value in there.
We are certainly jumping aquatic animals, if not sharks, at this point. And it's got a lot of gold. Dial, hands, pushers, crown, all in moonshine gold. 11 grams total.
I think that's gold. A metric fuck ton for the price that you're paying on it. They might be taking a loss here.
We've got, you know, bioceramic case and a matte black to go sort of alongside the gold. It is really a pretty delightful looking watch. We've got a black strap on it, and each piece is numbered.
From the pictures, it looks like the inside of the strap is textured to be like the surface of the moon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't see anything commenting on that, but that's I'm seeing here.
Yeah, I think you might be right. We have, so what they say, the melt value of the gold in this watch is $1,058. But Swatch is pricing this based on the price of gold on the day of Apollo 11's landing. So that means that you can get this for $570. And when I say you can get this, I am going to incorporate a healthy dose of finger quotes, because I don't think you can get this.
If anybody has any experience writing code to like buy things quickly, like if you've ever bought a Smith's directly from Smith's because you built your buybot, hit me up, because I'd buybot this watch, I think.
There are, in order to get one, you have to fill out what they're calling an electronic Swatch timepiece application, or an ESTA, which is funny, which runs from right now through July 21st. And you get in a digital line on this. It's a moon swatch. It's black and gold. It's got a bucket load of gold. They're going to be very hard to get. The resale value on these is going to be astronomical.
Oh, these are going to be absurd. I'm currently applying.
Okay. Oh, good for you. Good for you.
It's an investment. This is an asset. Right?
I don't know. This is a weird one. This is one of those where if you happen upon one or you get one, you're really getting something pretty special. These are.
I was born on a Saturday.
Yeah, someone in the comments on the Hodinkee website said this is, you know, 10 out of 10 rage bait.
It got me.
I think that's fair. I mean, this is the type of watch that people are going to have feelings about. Undoubtedly, it's very cool.
If I get one, we're going to have to go to Las Vegas to get it.
Okay.
Have you ever gifted a golden table clock to a president? No.
They ask you that question?
Yeah. So first question was, have you ever gifted a golden table clock to a president? Have you ever spoken badly about the moon on social media? No. I have spoken badly about Moon Swatch, but not. Have you ever spoken badly about Omega? Or so, well, I'm out.
We just speak.
Have you ever spoken badly about Omega or Swatch on social media? And the answer is a resounding yes.
We hate Omega.
And
now.
I'm not making that up.
You're not going to win this one.
I am now disqualified and have ceased my attempts to get in a digital line. But if anybody who does not hate Omega the way that we hate the way Omega behaves and hasn't opined publicly on such matters.
Oh, man.
Gosh, really, too bad. I never would have thought that this show would have a negative impact on my life.
We have ramifications. You know, you stand by your words.
I take nothing back. I feel like I'm pretty okay with everything I've ever said on the show. Some shit's been questionable, but, you know, I generally feel pretty okay.
It's like they made that question for us.
They did.
You know, like, these motherfuckers.
Give you a moon swatch now.
Yeah, and the best part would be when you won, and then they were like, "Oh, we see you lied on your application,"
and then you don't. So when I was selling beer, I worked for Anheuser-Busch, and I Some of you may recall this, but one of our competitor distributors sold Keystone, and they were doing a text to win drift boat. The only requirements were that you didn't work for any affiliates. And what I knew then, and this is again, some industry knowledge. If you see a text to win offer, text it. The amount of responses that come in to text to win sweepstakes, especially local ones, are so few. We had under 100 text to win applicants for a big ass Traeger. The odds are really good.
Yeah.
And for ones that last a while, you can typically enter your name every day. Wholly different. But if you see text to wins based off like from local entities, get in on it because nobody's doing it.
Yeah. 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 And that was a good boat.
It was a good boat.
You sold it.
I sold it for market value, like brand new market value.
$12,000 or something, right?
Five.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You sold that to Tony. You did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I still have access to it. I can still text Tony and be like, hey, like let's go, like let's float the river. And he'll be like, yeah, let's ride.
What's next, Andrew?
Oh, next for me. Let's keep in the vein of limited editions for the time being. The new Doxa Sub 300 TIE 5 Clive Cussler limited edition. I'm really pleasantly surprised by this Clive Cussler edition. So many of them are like really big and like a little weird or have
oddities or novelties to them. Like the heavy patent patina thing for these in the past. Yeah,
they've like a map dial, throw all of them in a dryer together for a few days and just like see how they come out. This is not that. This is a fantastic gray on grade 5 titanium, color match date wheel, COSC certified, like just all the things that you want. And it's really, really good. It only comes on the rubber strap with a pin buckle. Only 300 of them, $3,390. So, still their limited edition pricing model, right? But this is good. This is a good Clive Cussler.
Yeah, so they've got a dual level dial here, which are both in titanium, which is a novelty, but very cool. So two titanium discs sitting on top of one another with the cutouts being laser engraved, that gives you sort of a negative space on the dial to form the hour markers, unlike the typical applied hour markers they use. It gives it sort of a
really flat,
like kind of an aircraft vibe.
Kind of instrumenty.
Yeah, instrument vibe. A bit more technical looking than I think a lot of these things often than they often come across. It definitely has like a bit of like oomph to it that I think oftentimes the Doxa doesn't have, much less the, last year they had the 750T Clive Cussler edition, which I did like because I do like that watch.
But it was also the precursor to the 750T coming out.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a sub 300 in grade 5 titanium, and it's really, really lovely.
It's a shame that there's only 300 of them.
Yeah, that's right. There's not very many of these.
Because this gray doesn't exist in the Doxa ecosystem.
I suspect these will be just slightly easier to come by than the 1969 Moonswatch.
And because they don't care if you've talked shit about them before.
That's right. You don't have to pledge allegiance.
I cannot believe that I just got edged out because of my journalistic freedoms as an American. That feels like I need a constitutional lawyer.
What I do, I think that the bezel on this guy is, it's either a polished titanium or it's in stainless, but it provides a really nice contrast between the mid case and the bezel that I find really compelling. Also, the color matched date wheel. It looks really good. It looks really
good. Because it's got red font on it, yeah. Or orange font. So it color matches the minute hand and the orange in the bezel.
Yeah, and it matches the decompression. This is a great watch.
Yeah, I would get another Doxa if this was a all the time colorway.
And they'll fly. I mean, it's not like these are going to be widely super available, but
But I don't want to pay $3,300 for it. Like, I want to pay $2,000 for it.
Well,
that seems fair.
Have you ever heard of the Rolling Stones?
Yeah, but I need it to be $2,000.
You can't always get a $2,000. That's what they said, right?
But you get what you need.
Citizen's released a new Citizen ProMaster Dive, and it is likely the most boring, most stable. I like that word for this release. This is a very stable,
safe.
Safe feels more pejorative, but that's fair. Yeah, they've released a new ProMaster EcoDrive dive watch, and it is, I mean, I almost don't even know what to tell you about this.
And they didn't Citizen it. That's what you can tell them. It's a 40.6 millimeter case. It's 11.5 thick, 200 meters of water resistance. Like, they didn't ruin it.
They've done nothing bad here. Everything is good. It does have the one thing that you may not notice if you look at this very quickly is that it has, so they are aluminum bezel inserts in a PVD bezel that sits on top of a brushed silver steel case. And it provides but you can't really see that it's a PVD, a black PVD bezel until you sort of like, because the way the light plays, like from the top down, it's, anyway, it is a really nice look. It's a really nice look. Great size on these, great dimensions, 300 meters of water resistance. I swear it was 300. Am I just making things up? Okay. Well, 200 meters of water resistance. They don't come on a bracelet, at least at this point.
I don't think they will.
There were four of these released in Japan, three of these released in the U.S., a white dial with black bezel, a black dial with black bezel, and blue on blue in the U.S. that you can get.
What's the JDM?
I don't know what it is. I was trying to find it, and I couldn't find it. Probably red or something, knowing Citizen. But, man, I'll tell you, super boring and just
everything that I want.
Great. $450 on these. And based on Citizen's pricing models, these will probably actually retail for $350.
Yeah, maybe $375.
$375, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, you'll find them on Joma for $350, $375 all day, every day.
And gosh, I'll tell you, if you really just want a no-shit grab-and-go, truly grab-and-go quartz watch, I think you'd be hard-pressed to do a lot better than this. You know, we talk a little bit about, well,
the only wrinkle is with EcoDrive, you do have to wear it with some kind of frequency. They've improved EcoDrive.
It at least has to be exposed to sunlight.
To sunlight. They've improved the EcoDrive such that the ambient light of a room or even lights, like overhead lights, will offer some charge, but it really needs to get some sunlight from time to time to regen.
But of course, this is one of the new versions of EcoDrive Movement. So it's the E118. So you're gonna have a pretty trouble free as long as it's getting just a little bit of sunlight. Oh, Andrew, the JDM version is black dial, orange bezel insert, orange strap.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I got to dig my Avion out for you. It's been sitting in the window for years.
Okay.
It's got some sun bleaching and it
Nice.
It looks sexy.
Nice.
It's going to find its way into a more frequent position in the watch wearing.
I like that. What was the resultant color?
So the orange has kind of faded out. It's just not bright orange anymore. It's a little bit softer. That gray dial is kind of ghosty. And it's not dust on the crystal either. I checked. I did give it a lick and a wipe. Shouldn't lick it in case it's dusty, but I did get to give it a lick and wipe.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I don't know where it is. I didn't see it today when I was moving through watches, but,
what's new, sir?
Ooh, new for me. Let's talk about, Yema.
Always.
Just always doing it right. So Yema has released a new Navy Graph Barracuda CMM 2.20 in limited edition that was developed with the French Navy. When I first read that, it seemed odd to me. France obviously has a Navy. It just never has entered into my mind that there would be that there's a French Navy.
Sure.
Post, you know, American Revolution. So that's a little bit of a confession that I have that I just like, well, French, why would they have a Navy? Well, obviously they have a Navy. So what we have here is a forged carbon dial, which is super cool.
Forged carbon.
It is so neat. I think last time we talked about forged carbon, did some research into what forged carbon is. It is exactly just forged carbon.
Yeah.
I don't know. I figured it would be something different than like an actual metallurgy practice, but it is just forged carbon.
Yeah. Okay. It's just heat and pressure to.
Yep. To get these designs and these shapes. So applied hour markers, stainless steel finished, the CMM 2.20 movement, only making 400 pieces of them. But this thing is just neat, yeah. Right? Aside from being a partnership with the French Navy, this would be a cool, just limited release on its own. It's got this really neat red see-through case back that says Forces Sauce Marines and Marine Nationale, which I think is French Naval Forces and the French Navy. But, you know, I don't speak French. I don't parlez-vous.
You mean parlez-vous.
Yeah, you're right. Gosh, I can't do anything right today. But it's a Navy graph, right? But with cool new touches, cool new flares, a countdown timer from your, where are we at? The 8 o'clock to the 12 o'clock, just cool details, cool watch. Like I just like looking at it. That's all I want to say. I like the way it's designed. And
it's like sub 10 millimeters without the crystal too. I don't know if you mentioned that.
No, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah. It's the dimensions on this are fantastic. All of the CMM movements, Yema. I think the reason Yema stole my heart, I'll speak for myself, Andrew, but I assume you're on sort of the same plane, is that when they went in-house, with the intention of doing something that they were not able to do externally, which is to really emphasize very thin, very wearable movements. That seems like such a novel concept in watches, especially today. You know, we've got a few brands that are doing a similar thing. Nomos is doing a similar thing. But oftentimes we get these brands and they go in-house and they are incorporating some technology, especially with bigger brands. that is like, this is really cool. And you're like, yeah, but you forgot about the fact that someone was going to have to wear this Omega. Okay, so I'm not going to get a 1969 Moonswatch. Yeah. You know, like Grand Seiko, yeah, right. You know, you are doing really cool things, but you're forgetting about the fact that at some point, this is going to go into a metal box that's going to sit on someone's wrist.
And wrap around it, and they're going to have to lug that bitch around all day.
Yenna seems almost singularly focused on dimensional improvement with their in-house efforts, and I'm a really big fan of that.
I want to echo what you're saying, and they went in-house for a reason, and that reason was meaningful. We see, you know, in the last 10 years, we've seen brands come about and come to exist because they're like, oh, I just wanted to wear the watch. I just wanted to make the watch that I wanted to wear. Or brands like, well, I couldn't find the handset that I wanted, so we went in-house and we manufactured our own this, that, or the other thing. And there's no actual tangible benefit to that in-house manufacturing process. But with Yema, when they went in-house with this movement, they didn't just say, oh, we're going to make our own shit and it's going to be just the same as everyone else's. No, we're going to make our own shit and it's going to be meaningfully better. Like, that's the reason we're doing it ourselves, because the thing that we want to do to improve this product, to improve this thing that we're making, isn't commercially available elsewhere. So we're just going to do it. And that's, I think, what really, really enamored me, like got me so enamored with Yema, is that they decided to do a thing that was meaningfully better.
Yeah. Well, and that's not to throw shade on anybody else, right? I mean, maybe a little bit on Omega and Grand Seiko, but that's low hanging fruit. you know, the fact that their priorities line up really closely, I think, with our priorities is just a thing, right? But the fact is that they do line up with our priorities, and so Yema is awesome.
Yes,
yeah,
this is a perfect 5X factor movement.
So Notice,
what do I
wish? And Raven. Notice and Raven. So it's no secret that we are close with Notice, and I think it's perhaps no secret that I'm close with Wes and Colin from Notice.
I really like Steve.
And then of course there's Steve from Raven. Now I think for an outside observer, it might, like, the relationship between Notice and Raven might be a little like Raven, Steve Laughlin's Kansas based company, Notice LA based company. I mean, sort of in the space at the same time doing similar things, but I think
in meaningfully different ways.
That's right. The relationship is like, so 2 years ago, they released their first Trail Trekker, a watch that I've known about for a very long time. And it's a hit, right? This is a great watch. I had a little bit different experience here. I've met Steve on a number of occasions now. Really, really like the guy. I've had beers with Steve on a number of occasions, but every single time I've ever had beer with Steve, I was also having beer with Wes and Colin. So, and this is going back, you know, now at this point, you know, gosh, 6-7 years, right? So these are two groups of people, you know, or just
that are inseparable in your mind.
For me, like, this makes a ton of sense, right? Like, it just, when they first told me about the Trail Trekker, I was like, this is going to be fucking rad. And you guys, I'm so glad you guys are doing this. But I think for the outside observer, it might have been sort of a weird, like, what are they? Anyway.
They make perfect sense.
And I will also say, as someone that knows both of, you know, both Wes and Colin and Steve, this watch is such a fantastic, sensical collab. I love what they've done in the past, and I love what they're doing today. So the original Trail Trekker, really well built, very good looking GMT watch, gone instantly. Then we got sort of a wide out version, also
that was my sexy favorite
AF. Yeah. And now we're getting a new sort of black and forged carbon version.
So maybe we can bring Wes and Cullen and Steve on to talk about the process of what forged carbon is. I think
Steve hates doing podcasts.
I think Steve hates us, and I don't blame him.
I don't think that's true, but I do think he hates doing podcasts.
No, he does. He vocalized that.
Contrail GMT, 39.5 millimeters wide, 11.8 thick, which, you know, this is a beefy watch. Steve has...
It's got Steve's fingerprints all over it.
Steve has personally stated to me that he thinks the smaller, thinner watch trend is a fool's errand, and he just isn't going to play that game. Notice also not sort of thinness chasers, never have been. Part of that is that they're using a lot of Seiko movements. Part of that is that's just not their priorities. So it's no surprise that this is a bigger watch, 40 millimeters, 39.5, 200 meters of water resistance. We, for the first time, get a 24-hour bezel.
It's a forged carbon bezel.
A forged carbon insert. That's right. So, you know, as Andrew was stating, forged carbon, just chopped up carbon.
Gets that hot is, and mushed.
Yeah, made very hot and mushed together.
That's the scientific terminology for it.
Inside of this watch, we've got a Miyota 9075, which I think is a great choice. 42-hour power reserve. Solid case back, stamped with the Trail Trekker logo. Steel flat link bracelet with an FKM rubber strap in the box. Notice and Raven, both very good at providing you good options for wearing. $1,000, $1,075, will be available at Intersect LA on July 17th and 18th, which is this weekend. General sale opening on July 22nd.
You maybe forgot to mention the coolest part.
Oh, maybe I did.
The loom integration into the forged carbon.
Yeah.
This is like looking at a lava lamp.
Yeah.
But it just thin streaks and stripes of loom in this forged carbon that makes it look very alien-y. And like... It doesn't look Tron-y, right? Because it's random, or it at least appears it has to actually curvy, be random. Yeah. It
looks more galaxy.
Yes, it's like nebulous.
Yeah.
Right? That's I think the best word that I have for it. A nebula? Yeah. Right? It's this swarming, swirling pool of potential and life, and
there's a study in etymology that needs to happen there that we haven't done, but I won't argue with your choice of word.
Good. It looks super cool. It's like somewhere between tie-dye and a lava lamp with notices, I mean, direct competitiveness with Seiko in the terms of loom power. Right? Like you can spot a Seiko lit up across a well-lit room just like you can a Notice because the loom is just so, so thick and densely packed in there that like it's just always on.
What's next?
Okay. I don't know. Where are we at? Right
now? Yeah, we're at 43 minutes. We have time to talk about some more watches.
We do.
I've got at least one more I want to talk about.
Let's talk about the Christopher Ward collaboration with with the 12 Xander. So they're making 150 of these limited edition 12s in a skeletonized version with this bizarre graffiti-esque painting on the skeletonized movement from the top down. And it... And from the bottom, right? It's this whole... all the top view, all the bottom view is graffiti-painted 12. And it is something that doesn't compute with me,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I tend to think of Christopher Ward as pretty restrained in their design, even when they go skeletonized. You know, I think the Bel Canto, though novel and revolutionary, is still really restrained. That could have been a disaster, and it wasn't. I think the 12 is also something that could have been a disaster, but it wasn't because of their restraint. And this is just not that. This is just like pure fun collaboration. And I kind of dig it. It's not for me, but it's so far out of where I imagine Christopher Ward that I'm having trouble reconciling a 12 that looks like this.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think you said it, but this is a collaboration with Chris Alexander, a.k.a. the Dial Artist, who I think Dial Artist sort of first got famous with just like his own personal creations, where he was applying paint to dials for his own watches on social media. And the people were like, that's rad. And then he's making these. And then he's worked with IFL a lot. And he's just sort of, he's sort of a dude, and he is really well known for his watch art. And yeah, I mean, this is a cool, these are all hand painted sort of IFL, but this platform, you know,
it's not a dial that's hand painted. It's a movement that's hand painted.
I think it was in the very last, well, the, yes. The, okay. We'll
moving
come back
parts.
To that we'll come back to that. In the very last episode, I kind of said, well, IFL, these watches, you know, hand-painted, I get it, but it's not for me. This is different, and that's, I think, because of the lack of a dial on the 12. The 12 is a heavily skeletonized movement, and Christopher Ward has really just said, we're going to omit the dial with these, by and large. And so he's taken to painting the skeletonized parts that a dial would normally sit on. It is a fantastic look. It's a beautiful watch.
It's bizarre. I like it a lot. And because they're all unique and different, it's cool, but it's confusing to me.
Yeah.
I don't know how to reconcile it.
Yeah. How much are these?
These are, they're making 150 of them and they're coming in at 6,000 US money.
Yeah.
You
got to want this.
Yeah.
You're going to have to want these. Benjamin James. Benjamin James is sort of new player in the watch world. And then a few years ago, they released the Scarafor, the Benjamin James Scarafor. I don't remember if we talked about this watch or not. But really what it was is a pretty dressy, sporty TV watch. Really sort of like good build quality, not gonna knock any horologist's socks off, but just cool. Just cool. And then I think at some point, like the Cubitus came out and there was kind of some comparisons made. And even sort of, oh, well, this Benjamin James, like, is kind of coming through at an interesting time. Anyway, it kind of fell off my radar. I remember seeing it, and it fell off my radar. Well, they have now released a second watch, a follow-up to that first, and they're calling it the Deerhurst, which I think is a bizarre name. Not that there's anything particularly bizarre.
It's a deer sausage.
About
it's like a bratwurst.
It just feels weird for a name. But this is a neo-vintage sort of TV-dialed watch with a manually wound regulator in a curvy TV case. It's really interesting.
A knurled bezel.
A hobnail bezel. So this has a hobnail bezel, and it's gorgeous. It is absolutely stunning. So 36-millimeter case on a TV dial, it's going to wear
big. Every bit of a 40.
That's going to be maybe 38-ish. 42-millimeter lug-to-lug, and 9.1 millimeters thick, thanks to that manual wind movement. Stainless steel. We've got a really, really nice, like sort of curvy bevel on the very thin and delicate lugs. Really nice, like curvy case profiles. This is very much a vintage looking watch. Comes in an Old English white, burgundy, and denim blue.
How do you feel about the fonts?
All of those are lacquered. Lacquered polished dials with colored match sub-dials. that have these really nice concentric rings in the subdials to give you a little bit of texture. Also, matching handset finish. Because it's a regulator, you get central hand showing the minutes, a small seconds at 6, and an hour at 12. And which is crazy, which is just cool.
It's hard to read.
And a custom font set that I love.
I'd hoped that you would say that.
That I love. I absolutely love the custom font set. So there are a few things here I don't like. They've used rivet or screw heads on the dial, both at the hour markers on the
minute track and hour track.
And on the hour track. I don't love that.
I think rivet is the right word
for that. I don't love that feature. But everything else I just find really, really intelligently put together.
What I can appreciate about those rivet markers is that they match the pins for each of the hands. It's uniformly across. Everything is riveted down.
Yeah.
But I share your,
it does feel like a built, it feels like a built movement, and it probably isn't, right? It's probably, because of the price. So this comes in at what? $1,500 or so. Which means it's almost certainly not a hand-built movement, but it does feel that way. Salita 266-1.
$1,558 money.
Salita's 266-1M with that regulator setup. Yeah, 4 hertz movement. I mean, nothing like I said, nothing horologically groundbreaking here, but really interesting execution and a beautiful watch.
Yeah, the blue is really, really nice.
Yeah, I like the blue.
On the black leather.
That's my favorite. I do wish that this came in a black.
Or even a crispy white.
Yeah, that's right. I don't love the antique. Both the blue and the oxblood, burgundy, whatever we're going to call that, are nice. But
I don't really like burgundy.
Yeah.
I don't like most red watches.
It's a decision.
They remind me of the like HIV campaign from the early 2000s, where everything was like in parentheses red, like everyone had a red thing.
Yeah,
that's like right where my head goes whenever I see a red tiled watch. I don't know why. I don't know.
You know, the other thing about this watch that I'm maybe not wild about is the bracelet. It is a 7-link with pretty evenly spaced links, and it's pretty expansive. You know, I think it
would have been way better on mesh.
Yeah, well, and I guess for once, this is not my typical response, but for once, I do think this watch wears much better on a strap than it does a bracelet, or at least it appears so. I don't really like their strap options.
I think it's either. Because the bracelet kind of sucks for it. I think if this is on mesh with a straight link with a straight bar.
Maybe.
I think this gets your, this revs you.
Yeah, maybe.
It would rev me.
Yeah. But it's beautiful, right? I actually think put this thing on a fucking black croc and it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the blue dial.
Like a black really croc. Shiny black croc.
Oh, yeah. Like more shine on it than any of the polished surfaces on the watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, really kind of affordable, very cool watch. Something I, you know, wasn't on my radar.
I think it captures that like kind of a high horology feel of kind of a weird movement, something like novel, but not novelty.
Yeah.
Without being prohibitive.
Yeah, sort of, you know, not to overcharacterize anything, but kind of similar feel to what Denison is doing with their watches. Yeah. Andrew, other thing?
So I watched a new TV show today as background noise.
Okay.
It's called The Hawk. It is available on Netflix. That's where I watched it.
Oh, yeah.
It has received scathing reviews.
Okay.
Scathing reviews. Lackluster. Boring. But here's what it is. This is a millennial's time machine. Imagine Will Ferrell at his peak, like the height of Will Ferrell. Because he's still there. But he's a professional golfer who is kind of, it's kind of like Happy Gilmore flavored, but more has been rather than never was. So the whole premise of the show is that Will Ferrell plays a has-been golfer who, when he was a multi-time champion and was top of his game, and then crumbled. And so we join Will Ferrell in his quest to get back onto the tour where his adult son is a member of the tour and his estranged wife is, what's her name? Shannon. She's an SNL lady. Shannon?
She's the
Molly lady. Shannon.
She's the lady with who smells her armpits.
Yeah. So Molly, here's the thing. This is a who's who. Will Ferrell, Molly Shannon, Fortune Feimster? David Hornsby, Luke Wilson, Chris Parnell, Keith David, just everyone who gets on screen you recognize. And the reviews are, it's not funny enough. No, the reality is, this is Will Ferrell getting to make a five-hour movie instead of being limited to 90 to 120 minutes. So that's what he did. And it is funny. It is exactly as surface level as you want it to be. It is millennial, like, safety blanket of Will Ferrell greatness. I've loved every second of it. The critics will not, because the critics also didn't love Talladega Nights. Or...
Man, I really like that show.
Or Anchorman, or Blades of Glory, or any of that, right? You know, but this is that ilk. This is that made into 5 hours of consumable media instead of being limited to an hour and a half. Watch it. It's available on Netflix. It's perfect background noise. It's funny. It's silly. It's stupid. And it takes you right back to sitting on your friend's couch watching Talladega Nights as a kid. I loved it.
I like that. Is it funny?
It's funny enough.
It didn't make you laugh, though.
I laughed more than once, but I enjoyed it the whole time, okay. Right? Like, it's not written like a lot of modern comedies, right? Like, if we look at some of the best modern comedies, and let's use Ted Lasso, for example. Every line of Ted Lasso is a joke. And that's what's so beautiful about this show, is that they're somehow able to work in only joke form while building really beautiful characters and carrying a story. That's like some kind of unheard of accomplishment in the way of dramedy writing.
Okay.
Right? But 20 years ago, at the peak of Will Ferrell, there's fun in between, and then there's a joke. And then the fun like carries you to the next joke. So you enjoy all of it, but you're not constantly laughing. There's not the obscure quotes like from Ted Lasso where if you like every line is funny. Even the sad lines are funny.
Yeah.
This isn't that, right? Like Will Ferrell has not evolved to keep up with modern comedy writing. He is still the frat pack, and this show is very much that. And I loved it.
All right, I'll give it a try.
You're not going to hate it. You're just going to watch it, and you're going to enjoy it, and you're going to laugh some. And a couple times you're going to feel a little awkward, and sometimes you're going to go, ooh.
How many episodes?
10, but they're 30 minutes.
So. Oh, okay, so pretty quick.
Yeah, they're just, it. I burned through it.
I assume it's like one and done, right? I assume this is a single.
I will not watch it again, right? This is an Anchorman that you could watch, like you just like
No, no, I was going to, I mean, I assume this is like a single season.
I hope so.
Okay.
I can't imagine, I haven't finished the last episode, but I can't imagine this gets renewed.
Andrew, I've got another thing.
Do me.
So my other thing is, it's actually a twofer.
You would.
But it is really, cheating. Yeah, and that's okay. So I have been building a shop. Right. I think I've talked about this on the show a number of times. I've been building a shop and I am, you know, kind of going slow, but filling holes and, you know, trying to buy tools that will meet my immediate needs and then other tools. And I'm working on a motorcycle and, you know, working on, you know, being ready to work on the cars and just trying to be more hands-on with my stuff. So one of the things that I knew I needed, but I've been kind of hesitant to buy, was a good wrench set, like a standard combination wrench set. And the reason I've been hesitant to buy a combination wrench set is that wrenches are a little sort of, I'll send you a link, Andrew, but I can see you're looking at your phone. And yeah, I'm sorry. I'm
trying to like build notes in flight here.
Wrenches are an interesting item in the sense that you can get everything from fairly inexpensive wrenches that are today made in Taiwan, are very good, very capable. Everything from that to, you know, a Snap-on combination wrench set, which is going to cost, you know, $650, $700.
I guess I'm wondering what the delta is between a piece of forged steel in that affordable to luxury. Right. So maybe that's the question that you're about to answer. But it's just a single piece of forged steel with one open end, one closed end. Variable shank lengths, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah. Well, I guess you said I'm going to answer that. I'm not sure I'm going to.
Oh, thanks. So your other thing is that the hunt remains.
Yeah, no, the hunt doesn't remain. I've cracked the code, at least for myself. I've busted cracked the that code.
Nut.
But I sort of had to sort of, I don't know, kind of figure out what my priorities were. You know, the reality is, again, today you can get very good wrenches. So there's a couple brands that come up, you know, Gear Wrench is a brand that is very popular amongst sort of homeowners for being like mechanic quality. There's a brand called Tecton, which is a US company that mostly outsources to other countries. Its production, but also has a number of American-made tools, not wrenches, notably. And then there are any number of other very good tools. And then you sort of can get into the tool truck world, like Mack Tools or Matco. And then, of course, you can go to fucking Lowe's and get Cobalt.
That, like, if you break it, you just bring a Cobalt tool back into Lowe's and they just give you the new one.
Correct. Or you can still get Craftsman, although Craftsman is a shadow of its former self. You can still buy Craftsman wrenches. And they're probably, for most people, myself included, going to be great.
So I think combination wrenches are an interesting... I think like combination wrenches, fixed screwdrivers are kind of an interesting place in that world of like... It can only get so good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The diminishing return happens fast.
And of course, there are channels like Torque Test Channel and Project Farm or whatever that will, with various different testing methods, kind of try to, like, you know, put these in place. But the reality is for most people, any, you know, Husky from Home Depot, Craftsman, the thing you can buy is almost certainly going to be good enough. Almost certainly going to be good enough. And to your point, Andrew, if you go get Cobalt, inexpensive, you might spend $80 or $100 on a wrench set, lifetime guaranteed. And then there's Harbor Freight.
Yes.
Right? And then there's Harbor Freight. You've got Icon, which are very nice, sort of mechanic, professional-grade tools that are lifetime warranted. But then you've also got Pittsburgh tools, which are much less expensive, still warranted for life, and still very good.
And,
so,
and still just pressed or like forged steel.
That's right. And professionals are using these, right? Today, there are mechanics using Pittsburgh wrench sets, and they're like, these are fine. And when they break, I take them. So anyway, I'm kind of trying to figure out my priorities. I feel like a combination wrench set is just a staple item. And in some ways, sort of, it's like my identity is wrapped up in this decision, and which is bizarre. And so just forgive me for a moment. But one of the things I do try to do when I am going to make a decision like that is I kind of try to think of like, what are the economic impacts of what I'm doing? And I love buying American stuff. I love buying American stuff because I know that I'm supporting our economy. I'm supporting American manufacturing. I'm supporting some family who's probably gone through tough times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perhaps a family or a group of people. I say a family, but, you know, some group of people.
You're kicking a couple bucks into the pot at whatever manufacturing plant.
It's a contribution. Yeah. It's a contribution to an idea, right? You know, the reason we won World War II is because we made everything here. That doesn't happen today.
It was
today.
Because of the American fighting man and the man behind the gun.
Not true. It's because we controlled manufacturing. And that doesn't happen today, right? We don't control. In fact, so anyway, I think I've said that two episodes straight now.
We've spiraled here.
I found a company. It's a company that maybe people have heard of. I was really unfamiliar. There's a company called The Right Tool Company. And they are out of Michigan or Ohio, depending on which part of Right Tool we're talking about. But this is a company that makes their own tools.
That's not the link you sent me.
They forge. I sent you.
Oh, you sent me the Harry Epstein.
Yes. Code. Oh, okay. So that's the twofer. So there are two companies I want to talk about right now. One of these is Right Tool Company. So Right Tool makes a very, very good combination wrench set. They make a bunch of different sets, but they make a very good combination wrench. You can get these in blasted finish or polished finish. Their chrome work is maybe a little sus compared to like some other companies, but their actual wrench quality is almost second to none. These compete almost neck and neck with like Snap-on Flank Drive, the best wrenches you can buy. They're made in the U.S. They sell for anywhere from 35 to 50% of what you would get Snap-on wrenches for a made in the USA product. And so I bit the bullet on a 7 to 22 millimeter, 15 piece.
Do they have Imperial sizing too?
They do.
You just bought the metric.
First. I just bought the metric set because basically you're never going to use Imperial wrenches if you're working on cars in 2026, unless you're working on old Fords or something, like you're going to be using metric wrenches. So I just got the metric set, $240, a lot of money. It is a big fucking ask, but it
comes in a nice waxed canvas tool bag though.
And that's your thing.
That was the selling point for you,
everything.
Wasn't it?
No, I don't even have them in the roll. I've got them in my toolbox in a stand. The twofer here is because I just love the idea of this company. Here's a company that's committed. They're like, we're doing it. We're going to, through thick and thin, we're going to charge what we need to charge to keep it going. Please buy our products. And people do. I do. And maybe you should too. I bought them from a tool store. This is a tool store out of Kansas City, a tool store out of Kansas City called Harry J. Epstein.
Not affiliated and not in the files.
Not affiliated. I think this has to be one of the coolest companies in the entire United States. Harry Epstein is an old school tool company. They cater primarily to blue collar professionals in the Kansas City area. They have everything that any sort of tradesman would ever need to do their job. They buy sort of the True Believer companies stock and sell them. So what you're getting is a whole bunch of very cool American companies that you really are not going to find on the shelves of Lowe's, right? We're talking about Mayhew, Lang, you know, there's a, they carry a billion companies, but they also buy like really cool Japanese tools. Kyoto Tool Company, Koken, they have an incredible stock.
So they're buying the shit.
They're buying the shit.
This is a curated tool store.
That's right. And if I ever get to Kansas City, I am 100% going to pilgrimage there. The owner, a fellow named Jory Sacken, he is, I believe, a fourth generation family owner. Harry Epstein, I think, is great grandpa. Eventually wound up in the hands of Steve Sacken, who's Jory's dad. These guys just seem fucking awesome. Steve died, I want to say, last year, and Jory has taken over. I think these are salt of the earth people, and I just love everything about this company. And so those are my two things. One, right tool company, and two, Harry J. Epstein, tool company.
How was the roll that it came in?
It's fantastic. It's not waxed. It's a denim roll. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. I immediately took the wrenches out of that and put them in my very nice tool cart. But it is a very nice tool roll. I felt good about the purchase, Andrew.
That's something.
I felt good about the purchase. You know, I don't need a $240. They're the right grip 2.0. They've got a fantastic like gripping. I don't need that. But I wanted to. I just like buying things that I feel good about. I felt so good about this purchase. And I'm a Harry J. Epstein customer now. Like, if I can, I'm going to buy my shit from there because I just love the fact that they're like committed to this sort of ambiguous philosophy, and we need more of it. And so I'm a true believer, and I wanted to share that.
Look at you.
Which now. I think is what other things are for.
It's exactly what share other things this are thing.
For. So,
and for those of you in the Kansas City area, fix where you're buying your tools.
Sorry if that got ranty, but I just love it. I'm really happy about it. I didn't mean to be ranty. I meant to be just like excited. I'm very excited.
Everything you do is a rant.
Yeah, fair enough.
Everything.
Fair enough. It's pretty cool though.
I'd love to hear you opine on toilet paper.
Yeah, well, I don't have opinions about toilet paper.
I think if you got going on it, you would.
I don't think I do. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are things that I care about. That's not one of them.
You're telling me that porta potty, like chemical toilet paper.
I mean, I probably don't love it, but it's also not something I'm going to spend a lot of time worrying about.
That's
my wife asked me once. She was like, "Do you like this toilet paper or this toilet paper?" And I was like, "I didn't know that they were. I never noticed that they were different."
You maybe need to do a better job wiping.
I don't wipe. That's the deal.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You got that bidet. You're better than all of us.
Andrew, anything else you want to talk about before we go?
No, I don't want to hear any more about your bidet.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. If you'd like to, you can go to watchclicker.com. That's our website. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so on Instagram at 40 and 20 or, excuse me, at 40 and 20 underscore watchclicker or at watchclicker. If you want to support us, and oh boy, we hope you do. We got one new supporter last week, and it made my heart do happy things in my chest.
It palpated.
Palpated. Palpitated?
Palpitated? Yeah, palpitated.
Patreon.com/40and20. That is where we get all of the money that we need to keep this thing going. And it's not an insignificant amount of money, you guys. Seriously, hosting is so fucking expensive. Patreon.com/40and20. And don't forget to tune back in next Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, whenever we publish, for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.